Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Avoidant Attachment Recovery by Linda Hill is a self-help guide about recognizing and changing avoidant attachment patterns in romantic relationships. The book belongs to the popular psychology and relationship recovery category, with an emphasis on accessible explanations rather than advanced clinical theory. Its central purpose is to help readers understand why emotional distance, excessive self-reliance, discomfort with vulnerability, and withdrawal during intimacy can feel protective while also limiting connection, drawing on attachment theory in a practical style. Hill presents avoidant attachment as a learned relational strategy shaped by earlier experiences and maintained by subconscious habits, triggers, and defensive beliefs. The guide also contrasts avoidant and anxious attachment tendencies, addresses dating while avoidant patterns are active, and discusses whether attachment style can change. Its value lies mainly in giving beginners a structured vocabulary for patterns they may have noticed but not clearly named, then connecting that awareness to boundary setting, emotional growth, and more secure long-term relationships. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, avoidant attachment is presented as self-protection that gradually restricts intimacy. A central idea in the book is that avoidant attachment often begins as a protective adaptation. The avoidant person may learn to depend heavily on independence, emotional control, and distance because closeness feels unsafe, unpredictable, or demanding. Hill frames this pattern as understandable rather than simply malicious, but she also stresses its cost. What feels like strength can become a rigid defense that prevents receiving care, communicating needs, or tolerating normal relational discomfort. This distinction matters because it shifts attention from surface behavior to function. Withdrawal. Reluctance to define relationships, discomfort with emotional conversations, or sudden loss of interest may not be random acts of coldness. They can be attempts to reduce perceived vulnerability. The book uses this framing to help readers see that avoidant habits may solve short-term anxiety while creating long-term isolation. The practical implication is that recovery requires more than deciding to be open. It requires noticing when independence is healthy and when it has become a reflexive wall. By treating avoidance as a learned strategy, the book makes change seem possible without denying the real difficulty of changing deeply familiar relational habits. Secondly, subconscious triggers explain why avoidant reactions can feel automatic. Hill emphasizes that avoidant attachment is not only a set of conscious preferences. The book describes avoidant habits as operating at a subconscious level, which helps explain why a person may genuinely want connection yet still pull away when closeness increases. Triggers can include emotional intensity, perceived demands, conflict, dependence, expectations of commitment, or a partner asking for reassurance. In these moments, the avoidant response can feel like sudden clarity, the relationship seems too much, the partner seems needy, or solitude seems urgently necessary. The book invites readers to slow down this process and identify the sequence between trigger, bodily discomfort, interpretation, and behavior. That sequence is important because avoidance often feels justified after the fact. A person may rationalize distancing as logic, compatibility concerns, or the need for freedom, without examining whether the reaction was activated by fear of vulnerability. Hill, therefore, links recovery to awareness of patterns before they become automatic decisions. The practical value of this approach is that it gives readers a point of intervention. If they can recognize early signs of deactivation, they can pause, communicate, set limits, or choose gradual closeness rather than disappearing emotionally or physically. Thirdly, the comparison between avoidant and anxious attachment clarifies relationship cycles. One of the book's notable teaching tools is the contrast between avoidant and anxious attachment styles. Avoidant attachment is associated with distancing, minimizing needs, and protecting autonomy, while anxious attachment is associated with heightened fear of abandonment, reassurance seeking, and sensitivity to relational uncertainty. Hill uses this comparison to clarify why some relationships become repetitive pursuit and withdrawal cycles. When an anxious partner moves closer to reduce fear, an avoidant partner may experience the closeness as pressure and move away. The withdrawal then intensifies the anxious partner's insecurity, which can increase pursuit and deepen the avoidant partner's urge to retreat. This framework is useful because it prevents readers from viewing conflict only as a personality clash. It shows how two different protective strategies can reinforce each other, even when both people want connection. For avoidant readers, the comparison can reveal how silence, vagueness, or emotional absence may affect a partner who needs more direct reassurance. It also helps distinguish healthy boundaries from avoidant shutdown. The book does not require readers to become endlessly available, but it encourages them to understand that relational security depends on predictable communication, not only on personal space. Fourthly, dating advice focuses on staying engaged without abandoning boundaries. The book includes practical guidance for dating when avoidant habits are present. which distinguishes it from attachment guides that remain mostly diagnostic. Hill addresses the problem that avoidant readers may either avoid dating altogether, choose emotionally distant arrangements, or enter relationships while withholding meaningful vulnerability. The suggested direction is not to rush intimacy or ignore discomfort, but to participate more consciously. This means noticing the impulse to withdraw, communicating capacity honestly, and using boundaries as a way to stay connected rather than as a way to disappear. The difference is subtle but important. A secure boundary clarifies what pace, topic, or behavior is manageable. An avoidant wall shuts down dialogue and leaves the other person guessing. The book also treats dating as a setting where old patterns become visible. Early attraction, commitment conversations, conflict, and expectations around consistency can all reveal avoidance. By framing dating as practice rather than proof of failure, Hill encourages readers to test new behaviors in realistic situations. The practical value is especially relevant for readers who understand attachment theory intellectually, but struggle to apply it when emotions, uncertainty, and another person's needs are involved. Lastly, recovery is framed as movement towards secure attachment through repeated practice. A key message of the book is that attachment style can change, but not through a single insight or a simple decision to be different. Hill presents recovery as gradual movement away from automatic defensiveness and toward more secure relational behavior. This includes recognizing the origin of patterns, increasing emotional intelligence, tolerating vulnerability in manageable amounts, and replacing reflexive withdrawal with clearer communication. The book's strength is its accessible recovery roadmap: identify the pattern, understand the trigger, separate present reality from old defenses, and practice more secure responses. At the same time, the book is best understood as an introductory guide rather than a deeply scholarly or clinical manual. Some readers have found its explanations helpful and actionable, while others have criticized it for repetition, limited depth, or insufficient academic sourcing. That mixed reception matters because the book is most useful for early-stage self-reflection, not as a substitute for therapy, trauma work, or advanced study of attachment research. Its recovery model stands out when read as a practical starting point. It gives avoidant readers a way to name their habits and begin changing daily relational choices, while leaving room for deeper support when patterns are entrenched or connected to significant trauma. In conclusion, avoidant attachment recovery is best suited for readers who suspect that emotional distance, fear of dependence, discomfort with commitment, or withdrawal during conflict may be affecting their relationships. It may also help partners of avoidant individuals understand the logic behind behaviors that otherwise appear dismissive or confusing. The practical benefit is its clear translation of attachment language into recognizable relational situations, dating, boundaries, emotional walls, subconscious triggers, and the difference between avoidant and anxious patterns. Intellectually, the book offers an accessible entry point into attachment theory without requiring prior knowledge of psychology. Its main value is not academic depth, but usability. Readers looking for extensive citations, clinical complexity, or advanced therapeutic methods may find it limited, especially compared with more research-heavy attachment texts. However, compared with many broad relationship self-help books, it stands out by focusing specifically on avoidant attachment, rather than treating insecurity as a single general problem. It speaks directly to people who identify with independence as a defense and who may not respond well to advice that simply urges more vulnerability. The book is most effective as a first structured guide for recognizing avoidant habits and beginning practical changes toward more secure, long-term connection. If you would like to support Linda Hill, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.